All right, welcome to Well Talks. This is episode number 11 of Well Talks. So today we are going to be debunking some common health myths and hopefully replacing them with some health hacks and giving you some tips around how to live a healthier life.
And our first one doing Facebook Live.
Yes, so exactly. Excited to be watched. All right, so I guess I'll start. And I know, like, in our profession, you know, we hear all the time, and a lot of times people come up to us with all these questions, or, you know, I heard this from a friend, or my grandmother told me this. So we just wanted to sort of put some actual science behind it and talk about some evidence-based health tips. So the first one that I always like discussing, because we do hear all the time, especially when we are getting people's meal logs and, you know, when they're starting a health journey and trying to change up their diet, is one thing that a lot of people incorporate into their new meal plans are smoothies. And a lot of times there'll be smoothies purchased from a chain restaurant, even if it was a known health food chain restaurant. But smoothies usually are chocked full of sugar. So people will think that they're, you know, making a better choice, and they're definitely marketed towards being a health product. But a lot of times when people are choosing smoothies, they're just packing on excess sugar that is unneeded, very little nutrition. And I think sometimes even like a smoothie, especially a lot of the restaurants will just only sell them in a really, really large container, and it can be as much as like 4 Cokes worth of sugar in one healthy smoothie. So that's one thing. So a way to get around that is really just making your own. I think always, you know, starting with, you could even just do like a water base, but I usually like doing an unsweetened almond milk or unsweetened coconut milk for the base of the smoothie, and then from there you can add in your own fruits, vegetables, protein powders, whatever you want. Because then you're really controlling the sugar content, because a lot of times with these restaurants, instead of using an unsweetened base, they're using juice, and that's why they're really high in sugar.
Yeah, so smoothies can be really good for you. It just has to be the ones that you know what's in it, or you're making it yourself, because you can add a lot of protein and fat that'll actually keep you full, keep you going. But the ones that are just very sugar-based, like you're saying, are going to fill you up instantly, but it's going to be like anything that's a candy, where you get a rush and then you crash.
Yeah.
I like to, when we talk about the smoothie part of things, is to talk about juices, because I think that's an important relation that gets overlooked. I am not personally a big fan of juicing. A lot of people will go on like juice cleanses and say they're doing something with juice, all this. I don't like juices. I don't care what they're made from, like if it's carrots or beets. The reason for that is what people don't realize is that when you're juicing something and you're breaking it down into just liquid, you're taking out all the fiber from that, whatever it is. Let's say it's carrots. Carrots are good for you. I have no opposition to carrots. But when you juice carrots, you're taking an amount that you would not be able to just eat in carrots to make a tiny glass of carrot water juice. And then you're getting all the sugar, some vitamins, so yes, it's better than a Coke, but you're still getting this hyper dose of sugar that you wouldn't be able to get from just eating the carrots. So juice for smoothie, I'm always pro smoothie, but then you have to be careful where you're getting your smoothie from, making sure that it's got the right stuff in it.
Well, it's just, it goes down to, when it comes down to buying a smoothie, it's very, at the end of the day, especially if you're buying it from a chain or a restaurant, it's very business oriented. So if you're looking at, you know, the person making the smoothie, if it's a bunch of blank labels and you're pouring from a blank container and it's things that you don't really recognize or know what's going into it, chances are they are base fillers. So things that are very high in sugar, things that are meant to just either thicken up or sweeten the smoothie beyond. Another thing that you don't realize is that when you're blending a smoothie or you're blending something with multiple fruits in it, being careful of serving sizes. It's, you know, it's quite hard to overeat like actual fruits and to take more than you're having, more than you need, but when you're blending it up, it's very easy to overdo it, have way more than you need. So it's making sure that you're having the proper serving sizes as well. And I'm glad you brought up the juicing thing. That's, I think, a huge misconception that people have is that, oh, because it's a fruit, it's super healthy, and the second you juice it, it's faster absorbing, and your body gets all this excess nutrition or extra nutrition that you would not normally get from the fruit or the vegetable. But I think it's really lacking the fiber that people don't really understand that's one of the most important aspects of it, right?
Yeah, we're too used to making things easy.
Yeah.
Too yeah. easy. Even if it's, I don't know, 2 apples worth of juice, it's still in a quick amount that you're not getting without the fiber. It's mm-hmm. a big point there.
Yeah, and I think that's a good segue. Wanting to make things too easy is a good thing into our next topic, which is meal prepping. And people, you know, will use the excuse that they don't want to meal prep because it takes too long. But really, you know, it does take a bit of practice, but I think once you get used to meal prepping, it actually can save you a lot of time in the kitchen cooking, and it also saves you from then, you know, eating out. So some of my favorite meal prepping tips are right from the grocery store. As soon as you get your groceries home, like, just think of it as being part of the process as putting them away into your fridge. Just wash your vegetables, chop them up, slice them up, put them in a container, and then put them in the fridge. When I tell people that, I usually will still get that eye roll, but then for those who actually end up doing it, it's like, oh yeah, it was an extra 3 minutes, you say, but then it saves so much time later down the road when you go to make that salad or make that stir fry to have everything and I usually will just slice it, and then if I need to, you know, do an extra chop later if I want my vegetables diced and as opposed to sliced, then it just takes that extra step. It's super quick, super easy, and it's one thing that I for sure put into practice now, and it does save so much time down the road.
I like that. I've done that by accident a few times, and I'm so grateful every time exactly. after that day.
Yes, you will never regret it, yeah. you know, taking those extra 3 minutes when you go to, pull genius. Something quickly together and have all your vegetables in your fridge yeah. already chopped.
Well, realistically, we never really consider the alternative to prepping. It's not, we're always so quick to saying, oh, it takes too much time, it's too much for us to do, but our alternative is either not having food or eating the wrong food. Mm-hmm. And let's say you're still gonna, you decide, okay, you know what, I'm hungry, so I'm gonna cook. It's still taking you the same amount of time. You're just cooking one meal, mm-hmm. opposed to cooking enough for the next 3 or 4 meals or prepping. You know, and let's say you're not doing full cooks, you know, you're just doing that where you're prepping out your vegetables or prepping out your meats. It literally takes minutes at that point to just finish the meal for Monday night, Tuesday night, Wednesday night. Everything's ready, everything's prepared in your fridge, and it just takes that stress out of making the right decision.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, even having one of the parts prepped where you can portion it out throughout and then cook mm-hmm. the other stuff. Like, I like cooking things. Mm-hmm. I don't mind cooking. I like having it freshly made.
Yeah.
But prepping something like a big pot of rice to add, and then all you have to do is cook your protein mm-hmm. or some other vegetables, and your rice is already made. You don't have to worry yeah. about all that cleaning and extra everything. It does save you quite a bit of time. It's fantastic.
It's just getting into the routine of doing it. Mm-hmm. And I know when I'm not prepared, I will always make a bad decision.
Yeah,
when absolutely. I am prepared, there's your chances of making a bad choice in terms of what you're going to eat is diminished greatly.
Yeah, it's like having them, if you're ordering takeout but your food's already made, it's faster.
Yeah,
and it's healthy
for sure. Yeah, and it gets around, you know, those times when you just walk into your kitchen and you're like, I don't know what I'm gonna eat. So you open up your cupboards and you open up your fridge, and if you see a bunch of things already sliced up and prepped, that seems a lot more appealing to choose that option rather than seeing whole peppers and whole carrots and everything, and you know, you aren't gonna want to spend the time then doing it. So do that in advance, and yes, it'll save you lots.
One of the things too is that I always like to use the phrase preemptive eating when I'm discussing with clients who typically don't like to meal prep or typically are not making the best choices. If you have things that are prepared and ready to go, you're not waiting till the point where you're hungry to make a decision on what you want to eat. If you're hungry and you've gotten to that point where you're starving, and you open up your fridge and there's just a bunch of vegetables and uncooked chicken, you're not going to choose that. You're starving, you're going to order a pizza, you're going to run to McDonald's. If things are ready to go and they're there, and you're not waiting till the very last minute where you're absolutely starving, you're able to make the better choice.
I don't know if any of you have ever made pizza like yourself, like homemade dough.
Yeah.
Like fermented it and everything yourself, but that's awesome. And it's like a pre-thing too, because you make the dough the day before. And then when you get home, like pizza doesn't actually take long to cook. It's like a 10-minute thing. And the dough's already made. Yeah. It tastes better than anywhere you can order it from. So it's not like you don't have to have pizza. You can still have like...
We barbecue it on a pizza stone.
Oh, I love that. It tastes so much better. The smokiness from the bar. Yeah, but like it doesn't take long. It takes maybe 30 minutes of prep the night before, not fully intensive, and then the next day you just top it with whatever you like. It cooks in 10 minutes, 11 minutes, depending how hot you get. If you have a pizza oven, a minute and a half. So fantastic, and you saved a trip to the pizza or whatever. Absolutely. So good. Oh, now I want pizza.
Lunch.
That's it. Any other tips for the meal prepping? Cover it at all?
Just, I guess, the preparing before, you know, like taking that time on Sunday or whatever day works for you to actually write down your meals, what you're going to have, because then you can write down the ingredients that goes into it. So it is just when you go grocery shopping or when you start prepping, you know what needs to be prepped. And
that also saves your grocery bill huge. I find even with myself, if I know what I'm eating throughout the week, I'm not buying random things thinking, okay, maybe I'll have that tonight or Tuesday or Wednesday or whatever it is. You know what your meals are, so your grocery bill is nice and controlled, and it's shocking how much extra we spend when we don't plan.
Yeah, and then you know where you're going at the grocery store. So another way of it saving you time is not wasting time wondering what you're going to eat on the spot when you're hungry. So, definitely saves you time in a lot of different...
Well, and that's another huge myth, right, is that people think it's way too expensive to eat healthy.
There we go. Nice segue. This was not planned, I swear. It's fantastic. Do you want to start that off?
You can.
You segued it so nicely.
I just set it up for you.
Yeah, so I never even understood this myth of where it came from, because I've just always kind of shopped for the whole foods type of thing, and I've recently got more into, like, with my meats, trying to buy, like, whole chunks of it at a time from a butcher. Like, so if you go straight to the source that's selling to the grocery stores, you have to buy in bigger quantities, but you save a ton of money. Like, I've never eaten better quality steaks as I'm buying now, but I'm getting them for a price that I would pay for really cheaper quality meat. And I'm getting, like, these ribeyes and stuff, because you do have to buy more at once, but you save so much money, and you don't have to get, like, the ribeye. I'm a steak snob, so I want it. But you could get, like lesser expensive cuts of meat, just buy that whole thing at once, get it chopped up, frozen, and vacuum sealed, and you put it away in your freezer, and now you've got meat that you end up spending $5 to $10 per amazing steak on. You just got it at a different place because you took a little bit of time. But even aside from that, just in the grocery stores, regular grocery stores, like, vegetables don't cost a lot, fruits don't cost a lot, but people will spend $10 on a jar of Nutella. That's fine, but what do you get out of that? Where, like, how much does a head of broccoli cost? A dollar?
$2. Or $15 on a salad. One salad.
Yeah, but you just buy the lettuce and it's like, it's less than a dollar. You mix it all together and you have meals for like a week too. Like, eggs are not expensive. Really fantastic source of protein. It's good, nutritious value for you. And you spend maybe, I don't know, depending on what kind of eggs you buy, up to $5 for 12. That's like six different meals.
But even the meat itself, like, you're looking at meat, like, let's say you're obviously making a way better choice going directly to the source, but even in the grocery store, say you're not going to go out and go to a butcher, if you're comparing a packet of chicken breast, let's say, to exactly what you're saying, like, that salad, or even worse, you go to a fast food restaurant and get a meal, especially now, you go to McDonald's, there's no value meal at McDonald's. Everything is still very expensive, so that notion that healthy food is out of your price range, quite on the contrary, you'll end up spending more getting frozen foods anyway.
Yeah, right? Yeah, and I don't like going to a restaurant and spending a crazy amount on a salad either, but, like, just to buy it, a salad doesn't take a long time to make. So to buy the lettuce and just throw it together or whatever you want, and that takes as long as it would have taken you to drive to the store to get a salad, and you've saved... Now you've got, maybe for that same price, you have seven salads instead of just the one. It's not complicated. Nothing's really cooked unless you're cooking something, but that goes back to the meal prep. If you have leftover chicken and you want to throw some of that on top, perfect. But it should not be expensive. What people find expensive is when they have to go buy all the junk food, and that racks up the grocery bill, and then trying to throw in vegetables on top of that, or meats and stuff, and like, oh, it's too pricey. Yeah, but you're going to eat less of it because it's going to fill you up instead of mac and cheese and whatever it is. Like, sure, it costs a dollar for a box of mac and cheese, but what do you get out of that dollar? You're not... cost a dollar for a head of lettuce too, so you get more. That one bothers me a lot, because there's a lot of stuff in the grocery store. It's just a waste of money.
Yeah,
but nobody puts that together. Nobody.
And I know there will still be some people who say, but you know, buying it is more expensive because the organic vegetables are so much more expensive. And I know this is one of your favorite topics, the organic versus non-organic, so maybe I'll let you take it.
Yeah, I like passionately ranting about this. So, the organic versus non-organic bothers me because I've seen a lot of people, for exactly this topic of expensive, not eat more vegetables because they think it always has to be organic, and the organic does cost more. And so they'll have less because they're trying to save, but they only want to eat organic. That is terrible. So there should never be a time where we limit fruits and vegetables. I don't care if it's organic or not. If you're going to eat them, it's better for you. And again, we get picky on things that are strange and good for us. I don't know why we always attack things that are good. So if it's not organic, but it's a vegetable, that's great. But nobody cares. Like, no one's going to judge for Oreos or something. Like, you'll go and eat that, and they don't have to be organic Oreos, but you'll eat them. If Oreo makes an organic line, I'll lose my mind. But why are we picky on things that are good for us? So the other thing, too, is with the organic versus non-organic, there's not as much of a difference as people will make them seem. And like, what I'm saying here is like pesticides and all the different things. So organic still uses pesticides. There's this myth, that's one of the bigger myths, is that they're better for you because there's less pesticides. That's not true. When you're mass growing crops, I don't know if you've ever seen a farm, there's too many crops for you to sacrifice a big percentage of that. That's an income, that's a farmer's income that goes against their livelihood. They need their crops to yield as much as possible. They're not going to not spray them. They're spraying them with organic pesticides that fall under this classification that make them still able to call their crops organic. The problem is that these organic pesticides aren't usually as strong as the synthetic ones, so they have to use more. So it's not necessarily better or worse. They're still having to put pesticides on these things. And whether the potency of them is higher or lower, and they're using more, they're kind of balanced out. The thing that I do like about organic is that there is more of a culture with the rotation of crops. So you're not getting the same field growing the same fruits and vegetables every year, which depletes the soil in nutrients. So you might get a higher nutrition content out of the organics, but you're still getting nutrition out of the non-organics. And again, my bigger point is here, eat your vegetables. Mm-hmm. Don't sacrifice them because you think you only have to go one way. That's my rant. It wasn't too bad. It wasn't too long. Anything to add to those ones?
Well, it's just like that. Also, that cost comes down towards the marketing that goes into organic. You're not paying for the high quality farming and the zero pesticides and someone who's hand picking the you know, it's it comes down to the fact that it's marketed as organic, and it requires a lot more money to market it that way. So that's really what you're paying. And realistically, unless you are growing that vegetable or fruit yourself in your backyard and watching it and making sure that you are the one putting, whether it's pesticides, whether it's some other things to avoid infestation, it's fine to eat regardless. Like, if it's organic, if it's not organic, don't limit your groceries based on the fact that you can't afford organic, so you shouldn't be buying vegetables or fruits.
I like what you said there. But has anyone tried growing their own vegetables? Like, a few, you don't need a huge vegetable.
My nana grew their entire their entire backyard was a little fantastic. Farm.
Yeah, I always grew up with a garden. So we always had a garden, mostly just like lettuce and tomatoes. Definitely tons of tomatoes. And it's hard to eat a grocery store tomato after having a garden tomato.
Yeah, and that's the cheap. I mean, other than you have to put a little bit of love into it, care. They very inexpensive to buy a tomato plant.
Oh, yeah.
Yields a whole bunch of it. Lettuce keeps growing back, so you keep every once in a while, depending on how many lettuces you grow, you'll keep getting free lettuce. Like, it has a good yield. What I love doing is just like herbs, something simple where I can get fresh herbs all the time, and peppers. Because peppers are funny. The more you ignore them, the better they seem to come out. So you can just let them grow and then make something out of the peppers you have at
cucumbers
the end of the day.
Cucumbers are really easy. Yes. Just on a vine, they'll just grow really easily. You don't need to have a green thumb.
Yeah, very inexpensive. You get not all the time. They're not going to make your whole summer's worth of vegetables a thing, but it's fun to have. And you grew it yourself. You care more.
Yeah, absolutely. And especially, I know I'm still the only one with kids. But it's fun to involve your kids in that too. Like, we usually now, like, we'll just do a few pots of tomatoes. We had like a cherry tomato hanging plant last year, and for your kids to go out and like pick the actual vegetable off of the plant and get them involved and seeing where, you know, vegetables come from, and you can actually grow it yourself and it tastes so much better. It's a good way to get your kids to eat vegetables too, because when they're involved in that process of actually growing them too, they get excited around that.
That's cool, the connections. Yeah. I like that. I'm going to try it. What's our next big myth?
So I know one of the things, and it still irks me in 2019, that we still hear all the time, people who are trying to lose weight are buying the low-fat yogurt, the low-fat salad dressings, the low-fat cream cheese, the low-fat everything, the low-fat everything. And I mean, I'm not saying you need to go full on keto, but can we just please get it in our head that that fat is very good for you?
Yes. Well
and said. Anytime you see low fat, you know, they're replacing that with something else, and it usually means that they're replacing it with sugar. And so any of these low-fat products are usually just chock full of sugar, and I know we've ranted on sugar tons, but we need to... So I think hopefully people are understanding that sugar is bad for you, but we need to now still get it in their heads that that fat is good for you.
Well, it's truthfully, and the sad part is we need to demystify that word itself, fat. Mm-hmm, and it's because one, the ingredient that says fat makes us think of our midsection. And the fat that we have here, or I have here, that's the biggest problem. So like, and growing up especially, that's all we heard, low fat, low fat, low fat. And it's that correlation that needs to be broken, where we're not going to get fat from eating fat. Things like avocado, things like olive oil, coconut oil, those are essential to our health, to our brain function, to our skin, everything. Low-fat foods or diet foods in general is what's actually contributing to our fat gain and our weight gain.
Yeah, like you just both looked over to me.
Tell us, Bob!
I like this topic a lot. A lot of the things, so yeah, fats are good for us, just period, they're good. But a lot of the fats that we create are the ones that are causing a ton of the problems with health. One of the ones that drives me nuts is like margarine. I don't know how that ever came out. It was marketed as like a heart healthy thing. Yeah. So what margarine is just a fat that was liquid at room temperature. Maybe not as bad for us, depending on where it was derived from, that they've changed to be shelf-stable and spreadable because butter was supposed to be the enemy, but butter's not. Dairy can be whatever. Dairy's not going to be something we talk too much about, but butter is healthier for you than margarine, all right, everybody?
Yes.
So margarine, when they've changed it, it turns into this hydrogenated oil that becomes shelf-stable, spreadable, so it's convenient for us. But that hydrogenation process that makes it solid makes it harder for our bodies to break down properly. So it is going to be one of the biggest things contributing to heart disease is that hydrogenated oil that we put into a lot of things. The other big one is peanut butter. If it's not a natural peanut butter, if there's other ingredients, not only are they adding sugar, which I don't think that's a health myth, and we know sugar's bad for us, right? Then it's the hydrogenated oils or the partially hydrogenated oils, whatever they call it. It's these fats that they're changing to make things easily spreadable, stay like that. Everyone, I don't get the resistance on the natural peanut butter. I always tell people, like, oh, but I don't like mixing it. Like, why? you can't mix it? What's the why? Where have we gotten to that we can't mix it once? And then I learned if you store it upside down, it stays good after that, too. So it's not that complicated. But anyway, the hydrogenated oils are the problem. And then us overcooking and frying things make these fats bad for us. So if we're deep frying or we're smoking our oils, if you ever see the smoke come off your pan once you've heated up an oil that's too hot, you want to bring that temperature down. Those are the oils that not only have they depleted their nutrition because they've had to antioxidize themselves, so now you're not getting any health benefits out of it, but you've changed that oil and you've made it something that's more oxygen, like damaged. There's more free radicals now, and that's going to cause more of those clogging arteries and that buildup. If they're good, healthy fats, like you had said, Aaron, the different olive oil, coconut, avocado, even animal fats, not so bad for us. We've really made this a thing where they're just evil names. Like you say, saturated fat, and it's like all terrible. Coconut oil, fortunately, is starting to be something that people are getting to, like, it's a good fat. But coconut oil is all saturated fat, so why isn't that one a problem? So it's a funny thing that we need to, like, even when we're starting to make advances, we're still kind of thrown back because the terminology just, like, even when I say saturated fat, I'm like, am I sure? No, I'm sure. But it's a weird thing that's become this, yeah, mystified, terrible thing for you that it is not.
For sure, and eggs, too.
Yes.
You know, people are always doing eggs, and I'm actually quite irked because Tim Hortons just came out with these little egg bites, and I was like, oh, that's interesting. I could see myself buying those, but they only have two options. So the egg with the full egg with the yolk is they're flavored with, they have bacon in it, but then the other option is egg whites and spinach. I'm like, I don't want egg whites and spinach. I want egg yolk and spinach.
Yeah.
I'm like, can you make mine? You know, sure, I could throw a bit of bacon in there too, but I would prefer to have the spinach. So why can't you just have the full egg with the yolk and throw some spinach in it too? I was very, very irritated when I saw that.
Yeah, this yolk, I mean, the cholesterol thing, mm-hmm. that's the funniest thing too, that we don't just eat cholesterol and then become cholesterol. It's a weird thing, like why the egg yolk's demonized. That's where all the actual nutrition from the egg, like the protein is on the whites.
Yeah.
And it's some of the best protein you can get. But there's not that much
else
in an egg. Yeah, but everything else that's good about an egg comes from the yolk. And we're just throwing it out.
But it's, you know what, it's our society too. Like the problem is everyone becomes a Google doctor. And we throw around the word, like I can't tell you how many times I hear someone, you know, spew out nutrition or health advice. Oh, it has saturated fat. But then you ask the person, what does saturated fat mean? No clue. Why is cholesterol bad? No clue. No one understands really actually what cholesterol is. The yolk thing is mind-boggling for me. And then it also comes to down to the point where, like, why is it that North America, us in the States, we have the most diet foods, I think, in the entire world.
There's not
one country that compares to us in terms of diet foods, but we are also the most obese. You compare us to, for example, perfect example would be France. Very, very fat-rich diet, right? Their obesity numbers are way less. Not even on the same scale in relation to us, but they're very rich in butter, very rich in cream and
cheese.
But it not only is it that, but it's also the fact that we have no restraint in terms of proportion.
Yeah,
you know, it's okay. Yeah. This is a diet food, so I can eat a full loaf of it. And Jesus, I've been guilty of it myself. Oh, this is a diet food, so I can have more. No, that's not the fact. We still need to be in proportion. We still need to have proper control over how much we're eating and not go into excess. And that's the real argument, not whether or not it's high in fat or saturated fat or whatever the case may be. It's the amounts we're having as well. That's really what's also contributing to this issue.
Yeah, they seem to do everything that we think is wrong in Europe, and I don't have any of the health problems. Because aside from all the high fat and everything, their breakfasts are like croissants, desserts.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've been to France or Italy, but it's typical to start off a day with like a pastry. But the thing is, it's just one.
Yeah.
And
exactly.
Then they walk or bike everywhere.
I know. I get asked all the time, like, if I'm on a certain diet or do I not have ice cream or, oh, you know, what do you do? And I mean, my answer is always, I just don't live it in excess in either way or extremes. I don't, you know, eat tons of all this stuff, but I also don't deprive myself of anything. So if I'm going to have something, and I just portion it out and have, you know, a normal portion of it and enjoy it, eat it slowly. And I just don't live in extremes on either end of the spectrum, and it seems to be working.
No, it's important to just enjoy that. That's the thing too. We're just ready for that next piece of cake, of pie. We're not enjoying the one we're having.
Exactly.
We just want to keep stuffing it down. And what's the point of that? You're doing it for the flavor.
Yeah.
You don't eat cake to get full
because
it tastes good. But we rush through it and then we do get full. And that's a problem. But I do want to talk about the cholesterol because you brought it up and the fat thing. What is cholesterol? Everyone talks about the good and the bad and everything. So cholesterol has a purpose in the body. What it does is it transports fats around. So there's the LDL, which is the bad cholesterol. I'm doing air quotes for those that aren't watching. And then there's the HDL, which is the good cholesterol. The reason the HDL is the good cholesterol is that it brings cholesterol, fat, from elsewhere in the body. So in the arteries, it cleans up stuff. It brings it back to the liver for processing, whereas the LDL does the opposite. So it'll bring them out. By the way, those aren't the only two cholesterol molecules. There's VLDL, HDL, IDL. There's all there's different sizes of these particles that have all a role. We just focus on these two unnecessarily. HDL is a good one. It's good that we focus on that. The higher the HDL gets, the better we have at preventing cardiovascular risk. The thing is, though, is that the bad cholesterol, the LDL, the higher that gets doesn't always mean we're going to have a higher chance for a heart attack or any cardiovascular disease. The problem is we focus on these numbers and not actually what the bigger cause is, which is more that underlying inflammation. And when we look at inflammation, it's when that LDL gets sticky. So that LDL, if it's functioning well, people on ketogenic diets, they actually might see their LDL go up from a high-fat diet. That doesn't mean it's working improperly. It's doing what it needs to. It's upregulated because there's more fat to move around. You need more of it. You're just efficient. It only becomes a problem if there's, like I said, those high oxidized fats that you're smoking or eating the hydrogenated oils, where now those fats are damaged. They get sticky because they're damaged, and they start building up plaques on the wall. There has to be inflammation present for that to happen. You can have high cholesterol, and I'd wager that if you measured a lot of people in Europe, they'd probably have higher cholesterol levels, but they're not all getting heart attacks like we are. But it's just that combination of the two can be bad. So if your cholesterol is high and you also don't move much, you're very sedentary, you smoke, and then you're eating a lot of these bad fats that we talked about, then you're going to be at an increased risk. You don't need to look further into it. It's going to be that lifestyle plus those factors. But if LDL is just high and you're doing everything right and your doctor thinks you need to be on some kind of drugs to lower it, I would look into further testing because that is not going to put you at a higher risk. Being on those drugs doesn't prevent any risk for further heart attacks. There's a lot of them that get thrown around that aren't changing anything. And it's because you're not doing anything. You're bringing the LDL down. That's not changing your risk factors. It's, if you're still smoking but you want to take a drug to help with your risk, it's not going to change anything. So it's really that combination. And the fats get really I want to demystify them because they get this misconception from eating them to what they're doing in your body to this is all wrong. We're thinking about it all wrong.
Well, sorry to cut you off. This is actually something I think more people need to understand as well, is when you're being told, you go to your doctor, you have a physical, your doctor sits you down and says, okay, listen, you have high cholesterol. Again, usually 9 times out of 10, it's just you have high cholesterol, not explaining what that actually means and which cholesterol you have. So one of the things that I kind of want to stress, and now, yes, I understand that for some people it's not maybe not feasible or you need a little bit more coaxing to do it, but I think you really need to get an additional opinion from a naturopathic doctor, and understanding that they are doctors, and they're going to sit there and explain to you what these tests actually are showing. When you have high cholesterol, Rob was saying, Dr. Raboni was saying, there's a big difference between having, high cholesterol or being in a situation where your cholesterol is now having a negative impact on you. So become more aware, guys. Make sure you understand what these things mean, and don't just jump to the first prescription that is given to you, because that high cholesterol may not mean anything negative at all, and in fact could actually mean something good.
Yeah, and I'm very confident saying those things. There's no part of me that hesitates with any of that.
Yeah, 100%. 100%.
Yeah, awesome. I think we crushed that one. we're on fat and all that stuff and diet stuff, so I think our next myth would be the weight loss one. Do you want to start it off?
Yeah, absolutely. And I know we've sort of touched on this before, but I think, it is still a very big myth that, what your friends are doing to lose weight isn't necessarily going to work for you. There are just as many diets out there, again, my air quotes, as there are people walking on earth. So it really is, you know, about experimenting, trying different things, trying what works for you. But you also don't need to just stick to a certain diet that's out there. Like, if you want to lose weight, the best thing you can do is, you know, get a team of support around you and really take it as an individualized approach and try different things and don't get distraught if something isn't working right away. You know, it may just need a tiny little adjustment. It doesn't mean that that whole plan that you came up with needs to completely go out the window and you need to find a whole new plan. A lot of times it is just a tiny little tweak that needs to change, and then the process will start working. So
yeah, I like that. And I do think there are a few fundamental things that are success based for all weight loss kind of endeavors. One of them being exercise. Like, I don't think you can properly lose weight and keep it off if you're not moving. It doesn't have to be anything crazy. I've said this in the past, but I will continue to repeat myself because it's important. But just moving, where if it's just a step count or thing or whatever it is, you need to burn more calories than you're putting in. It's not all about calories, but at one point it kind of is. So you need to be expending the energy you're intaking. And then building muscle if you want to really keep it off. Because the more muscle mass you have, the more your body has to work to maintain that. Your metabolism comes up. Then it gets harder to gain weight in the future. Yeah. The bigger part now that we're seeing a bigger problem is starting that young. Because the more fat you put on, if you gain weight and it's fat mass when you're young, the harder that is to lose later because you gain more fat cells. And those fat cells don't disappear so easily. They just shrink, which you can definitely work with, but it gets easier to put weight back on because they're all there already waiting for storage. So getting the kids exercising is more important than anything, making sure that they're moving around, playing, being kids.
That is such a strong, strong point. And I don't think people actually know that and realize that. And I remember, because even the first time I learned that, you know, that it is a really, really hard to actually get rid of these fat cells. Like, when you're losing weight, then they'll just empty a little bit or, like, shrink in. But those fat cells are still there. So that's why, you know, people are going up and down. It's easy to, you know, for people who were overweight, once they lose, to kind of regain that weight.
Yep.
And I just love that point of, you know, you need to start young with our kids. And, again, nothing extreme, but just, you know, really instilling the values of physical activity, which is just going outside and playing.
That's it.
Or going in your house and playing, running around your basement. Like, just being kids, not being so, you know, restrictive with things, you know, cutting out screen time. And just, yeah, letting kids be kids, letting them explore, you know, in the playground, letting them climb the structures. You don't need to be there holding their hand every step of the way or pushing their bums up. Like, let their bodies figure it out. Like, it's pretty amazing. Like, my youngest daughter just turned 2, and we were at the playground this weekend. And of course, you know, she sees her older sister do things, so she wants to do them. And my immediate reaction was like, oh no, she can't do that. But I had to just, like, take a step back, and she was on this, like, wobbly, like, chain ladder, and I was amazed to watch her because she figured it out.
It's fantastic.
And it was. I was like, wow. But as parents, it's difficult, but we do need to sort of take a step back and let our kids explore their bodies and what they can do, because then they, you know, really get interested in how their bodies can move and what they can do, and they want to explore that more. And we need to let kids be kids and let them do that.
Well, I that's a fantastic point. And I love that, because it is very, very important to have healthy, active kids and kids that are confident enough to do it on their own. That's fantastic. Even to touch base on that, it also starts at home as well. Like, it's one thing to just sign your kid up for house league soccer once a week, go, all of a sudden your job's done. No, it really needs to be modeled at home. You know, if yeah, you send your kid to soccer that one day a week, but then the rest of the days, you know, you're at home and you're on the TV or you're just sitting there doing nothing, that itself is going to build habits that are going to end up sticking with that child. So it needs to be modeled at home. It needs to be, you guys need to be active as a family. You guys need to get out and do things. Yes, it doesn't need to be bench pressing. It doesn't need to be going on, you know, 5K runs every day. Mm-hmm. But going for a walk is fantastic.
Yeah, and calling a walk like, oh, a nature walk or an adventure. Mm-hmm. And then the kids get so excited around
like
it. And really, yeah, you're just walking like 2 blocks around your neighborhood. Mm-hmm. But It's a scavenger hunt or an adventure walk.
And it takes that physical exercise from being a chore to being something fun and mm-hmm. something exciting. You know, I've done a few events at schools where I've gone in and done physical fitness programs with children, and it's scary and sad to see a lot of kids really correlate this training or this physical fitness as a chore or something mm-hmm. that, you know, like they're relating it to, you know, doing math, and it's sad because as a kid when we were growing up, it wasn't the case, and now you're finding more and more where kids are having this negative, you know, relationship towards physical fitness and training.
But you see it with like gym class, which yeah. like physical education. It's important and it gets overlooked. Where like it's the first thing cut out if there's no time mm-hmm. in the day type of thing. It's used as a punishment, mm-hmm. where mm-hmm. like you have to sit out in gym class. Like that's a terrible thing to be teaching. They should get double gym class if they're yeah. too hyper in yeah. class to tire them out. Like, what's going on? I don't know. But you have to start it young.
Yeah.
That is one of the keys. I know we went a little bit on a tangent.
Yeah.
The other big thing that I think will help everybody with some success is eating whole foods. Mm-hmm. Anywhere within the exercise, eating whole foods, you can go into 100 different diets, but as long as you have those fundamentals, then you'll be better in weight loss. But then within that, there's a lot of play, and then that's where you find those differences, where if your friend did it one way, if they went vegetarian and lost a bunch of weight, they were successful, but you didn't. That doesn't mean, yeah, like the vegetarian diet doesn't work for everybody. It works for some people, works great, doesn't work. But you have to try it. And as long as you're getting like whole foods and from a variety of sources, you should be okay. But then you have to play with the different types of things that make you feel your best. Mm-hmm. So weight loss shouldn't be really the indicator of whether a diet's working for you.
Exactly.
It should be more how you're feeling, and the weight loss will come. The other thing is people try to jump to it too quickly, or they just don't give something enough time, where mm-hmm. they don't realize that it took maybe 20 or 30 years, depending on when they want to start weight loss, to get to the weight that they don't want to be at. Mm-hmm. It's not going to only take 1 month to get down to mm-hmm. your ideal goal weight. That's going to be, make it take a year. Mm-hmm. It shouldn't be a yeah. struggle. But by a year later, then you're not having to worry about weight because you've implemented these changes that yeah. are just you now. And now weight's not a problem. Like you said, everything in moderation. You don't have to think about a diet you're doing yeah. or anything like that. It should be a regular thing that's just happening. You feel good, then you start to look good, mm-hmm. and then you're happy with everything.
Yeah.
Yeah, 100%.
Want to do maybe one more?
Well, yeah. Let's, Actually, you know what? Why don't we talk about being cold and...
Oh, sure.
Yeah. I like it, 'cause I'm a little chilly right now, but it's not a bad thing. It's not... I really like that one. So everyone thinks that, and it's such a passed down myth. I think this is one of like the first health myths you're introduced to, but it's that if you're out in the cold and you're not bundled up, then you're going to get sick. Mm-hmm. You're going to get a cold. You're going to get a flu or whatever. Bundle up, or if you're wet, your hair's wet, you're going to make your neck cold or whatever they say, and you're automatically going to get sick with a cold. That is so untrue. And I think it actually starts to borderline on the opposite of what happens. Not borderline, it kind of does. A lot of newer research is coming out with studies in getting the body cold, and it's actually having immune boosting effects. Where this myth comes from is the fact that when you're actively cold, your immune system slows down, just like cold does to anything. You can't move as fast. Everything kind of slows down. Even your heart rate at some point will slow down if you're cold. You try to do things to counter that. But when you're cold, immune system is more susceptible to infection. That doesn't mean cold is sickness. Cold isn't a cold, mm-hmm. and you can't get sick if there's nothing around you to get you sick. So if you're out in the cold and nobody's around you, you're not going to get sick. Yeah. There's nothing to get you sick unless there's some pathogen floating through mm-hmm. the air. It does not make you sick to be cold, but it can increase your chances of getting sick. That being said, like I said, that new research coming out is showing that exposure to cold, because your body has to compensate for that, and there's different stressors you're putting on your body, it comes back stronger. Mm-hmm. So exposing yourself to a little bit of discomfort makes you more able to handle those pathogens or whatever it is later on. So you don't have to be super worried. I mean, you don't want frostbite or anything. Like, yeah. Don't go and hurt yourself out of the cold, but being a little bit chilly or wearing bare feet in the house, making your feet cold, is not going to make you get sick unless you're around sick people already.
And I mean, germs and viruses and bacteria thrive in warm yes. environments too. So instead of being out in the cold, if you're like in a warm yeah. environment too, then you may be more susceptible to getting that bacteria because it's, so it's around you.
Yeah, they like hot, humid climates. Yeah, exactly. So what are you going to do? Go into a sauna to try to avoid it, get sick fast? Very good point. I like that one.
Well, it's realistically, there's... what was I going to say? If you take a population of people, 10 people out, and you put them into the cold, and you know a few get sick, and then the others don't, there's something to be said about that. You guys are all in the same cold environment, but if you know 5 of the people out there, their immune systems are you know elevated, they're healthier, they're maybe more fit or eat healthier, they're able to fight off whatever pathogen is out there, mm-hmm. versus the other 5 who, again, were exposed to that cold weather, and maybe they're a little bit more, they react a little bit more to that cold weather, their immune system drops a little bit more due to them not being healthy, the underlying cause being their immune system was weak before the cold weather, not due to it.
Yeah. Right? Actually, bonus myth to go off of that, I think it would be a good place to maybe segue our ending, but what does make you sick easier is sugar, which is a fun myth where if you're sick, you should drink orange juice or ginger ale. There's actually studies, okay? I could, if somebody needs it, I'll find it and I'll pull it up for you. But there's studies that show that with a glass of orange juice, they measure your antibodies. Like your immune system actually is suppressed after you drink a glass of orange juice because of the sugar. So that vitamin C that you think is going to keep you from getting sick or make you not stay sick as long, you're actually getting more harm out of drinking that sugary beverage than you are good. So not only does it suppress it in the moment, but it keeps it suppressed for a few hours after that. And if you keep drinking orange juice all day while you're sick, you're actually just making yourself stay sick longer. That research that came out on the vitamin C thing, there is like research that backs it, but it was on vitamin C, not orange juice. It was a supplemental vitamin C, and even more so is actually, it only worked really well in people that were exercising regularly. So sedentary person taking loads of orange juice or vitamin C, not going to help when you're sick. Probably going to make it worse. Not if it's supplemental vitamin C, it won't make it worse, but the orange juice will. Same with the ginger ale. There's really no ginger in ginger ale. So ginger does have anti-nausea. It can settle your stomach, but ginger ale is a very different thing. So I like to throw in that little bonus myth busting. Hopefully people can get some tips from there. Any closing remarks? We're going to do a round 2 because we've got some more to cover.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, just if anybody is catching this live or a replay, then I would just love for them to comment below some of their, you know, health myths that they grew up with or that still believe now, and we'll respond back with
love to cover
some answers.
We'll just make another podcast.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Perfect. Thanks for listening.
All right. See you again.
Have a good one, guys.